How healthy is your community? The University of Wisconsin's Population Health Institute has released their annual county health rankings and roadmaps for every county across the country. Here in Wisconsin, the so-called WOW counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington, all ranked in the top five of the state's healthiest counties. Neighboring those suburban counties, Milwaukee County ended up near the bottom of the list, ranked 70th out of 72 counties. How can the health outcomes for communities so close to each other end up so far apart? More than 80 factors were considered in this year's county health rankings. And here's one that might surprise you. Our civic life can have big health impacts. You can find a link to this year's report on our website. Go to WPR.org/Central Time. And you can join this conversation at 800-642-1234. Are there things that make your community a healthy, happy place to live? What are they? What could your community do to improve health outcomes? What would you like to see happen to increase social and economic opportunities for others, which, as we'll find out, is a factor in our well-being? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Sherry Johnson is director of the UW Population Health Institute and the principal investigator of the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps that's funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Sherry's also a professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Sherry, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
As I mentioned, a lot of factors go into this report. Can you give us the big picture? What are you hoping we can learn from this county-by-county health report?
Correct. So nearly every year in the last sort of 12 years, we've taken an annual look at the health of nearly every county in the United States. And we use a model of health that helps us understand that health is determined by a lot of factors, things like the social and economic conditions that we live in, the physical environment, our access to clinical care or health services, and our health behaviors. And so we use that model of health to spark conversations in local communities, to help local communities really dig into their data to try to look at where they have strengths in some of those areas and where there's room for improvement. And this year we focused on civic health, and we thought about it in two ways. We thought about it in terms of civic infrastructure, which includes the places where we can gather, learn about each other, understand the democratic process, as well as civic participation. And that includes the way that we participate in community life, things like volunteering and mentoring, but also voting and having a say-so in policy.
And I want to spend some time on that civic infrastructure and its impact on our health. I want to look first, though, at one thing that seems to be consistent with past versions of this report, a continuing racial disparity when it comes to health outcomes. And that might be from one county to another, but the report points out even in a county like Dane County that looks pretty good on the report, you're still seeing those disparities there. Can you talk about what you found and the persistence of these disparities over the years?
Yeah, so one of the new features this year that you can take a look at in the county snapshot is a bit of a historical descriptor statement. It includes a link to an opportunity to learn about the Native nations that lived on the land of that county. And it also includes information about counties that experienced one particular type of policy, redlining, that has a long arc of impact in terms of the social and economic resources that are available in certain communities and promote health, and that were intentionally made unavailable in other communities and have detracted from health. So that's a really important addition to understanding why things are the way they are and why groups of people in different places and different counties across our state have not had the opportunity to experience the same quality of health or length of life because of historical policy and practice like redlining.
Can you talk a little more about the practical impacts of something like redlining, a big tool in maintaining segregation in a lot of Wisconsin communities? What are some of the specific health impacts of that here in 2023?
Right. So if you think about the way that redlining allowed some people to purchase homes and to build equity in those homes and then have both economic cushion to respond to any sort of financial shocks that they might experience, but also to invest in the future of their families and communities by having the resources available for example, higher education or home purchases for future generations. So there's a generational impact that wealth building has had, and that generational impact has been different for those that were discriminated against through federal policy that deemed some neighborhoods unworthy of investment, and the people that lived in those neighborhoods then did not experience the same opportunity as those who were able to get those federal loans. So also think about the way that residential segregation is linked to school segregation and segregation through a more modern practice of digital redlining, where many of those same neighborhoods that were redlined through federal policy now have less access to digital broadband services, which are a key part of the civic infrastructure that we lift up in this year's report as well.
Talking to Sherry Johnson, director of the UW Population Health Institute and principal investigator of the report we're talking about. It's called the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps Report. It goes county by county in Wisconsin and around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think makes your community a healthier place to live or a less healthy place to live? And we're going to get into this idea of civic infrastructure. Now, think about things like parks in your community, libraries, community centers for seniors or teens or everybody in between. Do you have those? Do you wish you have those? How big a part of your life are they if you do have them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sherry, can you talk a little more about this idea of civic infrastructure? I gave a couple tastes of what that might mean. What were you looking at in this report?
Right. So you did name some of the key places that we focused in on. So places like libraries and parks that can foster social connection, as well as policies such as automatic voter registration and early in-person voting that allow people to engage. So it's both the places that we invest in, that we allocate our shared resources to, and the policies that form an infrastructure that can make participation in decision-making processes easy and available to as many people as possible.
Now, people might hear that and say, hey, wait a minute. I thought this was a health report. What's the civics doing here? What is the civics? Can you draw the line between those civic foundations and policies and the well-being of a community?
Right. So those infrastructure elements are the places that we know also correlate to resources that are necessary for health. So things like adequately funded schools and parks and broadband internet are part of the civic infrastructure. Broadband internet became really important during the pandemic for a number of things, whether it was telehealth access or access to social benefits that became available to help people meet their basic needs. When you think about parks, you can think about access to exercise opportunities, access to gather with neighbors and even new people that you haven't met yet to understand each other's perspectives and come to some shared understanding of priorities for resource allocation. So there are a lot of different ways that civic infrastructure can create the places and strategies for us to come to some agreement about how we construct the conditions that are necessary for good health.
In the report, you give some case studies of communities that, might have had a difficult civic infrastructure situation, but decided they didn't have to live with that and made some changes. One you looked at was Greenville County, home to Greenville, South Carolina. Can you talk about what you learned from that experience?
Yeah, that was a place where there was a lot of grassroots organizing around transportation barriers, and they gathered many local residents to help shine a light on the importance of equitable transportation, and were able to see some substantial investment in transportation to particularly neighborhoods that, again, had been negatively impacted by previous policy. and improved the county public transportation overall. So local advocates who were called Green Shirts were instrumental in collecting input and signatures from bus riders and lifted up those concerns to local leaders about the need for enhanced services. And they ultimately got an $11 million grant for a new maintenance facility. They got electronic payments instead of cash payments that folks weren't even getting their change back. They got expanded hours and new routes to underserved areas. So that link from civic participation, so people who are closest to the problem of inadequate transportation, collecting data on the bus from other people, and then using that data and their own personal experience to advocate for a better system that is beneficial to the whole county.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Madison. Mark, hello.
Hello. I'm interested. All these health metrics are interconnected, as your guest has pointed out. Is there one metric that a community focused on would have the most impact on the others?
Oh, interesting question, Mark. Is there one particular aspect here that might be the low-hanging fruit, that big investment that's going to pay off the most, Sherry?
It is a great question. And we actually have more than 90 measures in the county snapshot for local change makers to take a look at, to understand, and then to really make those local decisions together about what makes the most sense. So the short answer would be no, there isn't one measure that we think all communities should focus on. You can look at your data, you can disaggregate it, meaning break it up by different racial and ethnic groups to better understand if everybody is having the same opportunities and outcomes. You can think about, where you have the most shared priorities and start there. So there's a lot of ways I think that people can use the data for action. And that's really what we hope, that this is a spark of a conversation, and it's a public good resource that people can use to make change.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Sherry Johnson, director of the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute, principal investigator of the report we're talking about titled County Health Rankings and Roadmaps. She's with us to talk about this year's rankings for Wisconsin counties and the many factors that go into building healthy communities. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about this report, this idea of civic infrastructure? When you look around you, at your own community, do you see a lot of that? Are there parks where people get together and you can meet your neighbors? Are there libraries, community centers, schools that let people have public meetings, things like that, where you can go and feel connected to your community? Do you wish you had more of that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Sherry Johnson, director of the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute. We're talking about this year's County Health Rankings and Roadmaps report and the many variables that go into creating healthy communities. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see health disparities within your community? What should your local government say or local leaders be doing to improve health outcomes? And this report focuses on civic life, civic infrastructure. Do you feel like you have that in your town? Places where people gather, maybe people from different backgrounds. Have you tried to make a change in your community? Who did you reach out to? How did it work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Sherry, you mentioned change makers in communities. Mm-hmm. I think you're hoping that your report gets used by people who want to make change. Who are you looking at when it comes to people, your audience for the report and what they're going to do with it?
Yes. So we hope that change makers from across the spectrum take a look at the report. So that means grassroots organizers who are working on making sure that everyone who's eligible to vote can vote. That means elected officials who are responsible for making policy for all of us in Wisconsin. It means organizational and institutional leaders across sectors. So the healthcare sector, but also the housing sector, the governmental public health workforce, For example, the American Medical Association has declared recently that voting is an important determinant of health. The American Public Health Association has made similar declaration. The Healthy People 2030 has included voting as a research objective. So there are a number of organizations that are rallying around this concept of civic participation and the many ways that we can take steps together to improve civic participation and ultimately improve how long and how well we live.
I want to look at another community you highlighted. This one, Cornelius, Oregon, and how Latino groups there have helped to improve their overall civic health. What did you see there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cornelius was a great story. So this is a small suburb outside of Portland where a growing Latino population was not yet fully engaged in the decision-making process. And so local leaders in community organizations, as well as in government, got together to try to expand their engagement and used a number of strategies and have seen some really great outcomes. So now more than 50% of the commissions and boards in that community have Latino representation. There was a very concrete outcome in terms of them working together to create a new housing structure for seniors that also includes a library on the first floor. And that allows the school children from a nearby school to interact with seniors and with bilingual librarians. So they've really taken this concept of civic participation, leading to the resourcing of civic infrastructure and really expanding the voices of people in the community who have input into how we use our shared resources. It's a great story.
And as I'm reading the story, it sounds like, you know, some people in local government and some people with local Latino groups work together. They form this partnership. Now, if somebody is a local leader or a change maker and says, gosh, we're doing all this work here, but there is a part of our community that isn't at the table. What do you recommend for them to help reach out and start making those connections?
Right. I think it's starting with understanding who are the leaders in that community, that there are local leaders at the grassroots level that are part of many of the communities that have not had a fair seat at the table. So it's reaching out to those leaders, being present in their meetings and social activities to really get to know them and to understand their priorities and perspectives. And then being systematic, I think the way that Cornelius was in terms of building the opportunity for participation through things like dual language town hall meetings and dual language surveying that really has made measurable change in that community.
We've got a link to the report at WPR.org/Central Time. People can go there and look at their own county or any county they're interested in. Can you give some guidelines, some suggestions for people who want to take this for a spin, see what they can learn from it and see what they can do with it?
Yeah, so please go to countyhealthrankings.org to take a look at your county snapshot. You just type in either your zip code or your county name, and you'll see an array of data that you can also look at in comparison to other counties in Wisconsin, as well as national rates. And then I want to draw attention to something called What Works for Health, which is part of our website, and it's a goldmine of more than 400 strategies and programs that have been analyzed for levels of effectiveness. So when you want to get to the take action part, you can go to What Works for Health and find evidence-informed strategies, things like expanding civic education for our K-12 students so that they're fully prepared to participate and lead our democracy going forward. There are things like voter turnout initiatives that can help expand representation in the democratic process. And so take a look at What Works for Health if you are interested in strategies that have been analyzed and reviewed for effectiveness. And the website is countyhealthrankings.org.
And I'm guessing research of this scale gives a lot of answers, but probably also raises a lot of questions. Sherry, what top questions on your mind now coming out of this report process?
So every year we ask ourselves, what is missing? What else do we need to add to help local communities take their work a step forward? So this year's focus on civic health, including civic infrastructure and civic participation, was part of that process of asking ourselves what else is needed. And we plan to continue to dig deeper into what often are called those more upstream drivers of health. So looking away from personal behaviors, understanding that personal behaviors are nested in a set of conditions that are created by our social and political processes. How do we help people understand that, measure it, improve it is sort of the path that we're on.
Sherry, thanks for sharing your work with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
That's Sherry Johnson, director of the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute, principal investigator of the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps Report, and a professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She joined us today with a look at this year's report, How the Health of Wisconsin's Counties Measures Up. You can find a link to that report and check out what's going on in your neck of the woods. We've got a link at wpr.org/centraltime.